tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
So, on a week where there's like pretty much no tech news, is there even a need for a weekly tech infrastructure podcast? Who knows? Suppose we could talk about beer and wine all night, right?
Oh, yeah.
And we've got Enrico Signoretti on as a special guest as well, so I know he could chime in on that.
Hey, thank you for having me in.
Oh, pleasure. Hey, you know what I thought as well? Because I was kind of thinking, what the heck are we going to talk about? There really is like a dearth of news, I think, following the end of VMworld. I nearly said the end of VMware there. Prophetic? No. The end of VMworld.
End of the world.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. And I think a lot of Europe, you know, tends to be on holiday. Anyway, whatever. So I was like scratching my head, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about? And I realized, you know what? It's episode 52, right? Which means next week is the 1 year anniversary of the show, which is kind of
cool.
Yeah.
Have we done one every week? We didn't even skip a week. Well, no, we didn't do one.
Yeah, we skipped a week a couple of weeks ago. But you know what? I think we skipped episode number 50, but I still called the episode after it 51 as if we hadn't skipped one. Because I'm going to put Gabriel's live show in as 50. Just keeps the numbering more sequential anyway. But you know what? I went back and looked at the first show that we recorded. And so guess what the kind of news topics were? They were, is HP going to buy EMC? Is EMC going to split out VMware? You know, all the same kind of stuff that's still being dragged around in the news at the moment.
That's interesting because the split was one of the most interesting topics at VMware from my point of view. I talked about this split with anyone, and I got a lot of comments, especially from VMware people.
I think we'll park that a little bit for now, Enrico. I think we definitely will talk about it later on. I just want to mention one more thing about the first show that we did, right? It was, I can't remember the name of it now, but we did the first, obviously, the first secret Windows phone app, and I want to say that it was the HoloBook app. I don't know if you remember that one, Mark, but
Yeah, it might have been the HoloBook. I can't remember. Probably was.
But you know what? Have we lost a bit of the kind of what we were aiming for with the podcast, I think, by not having anything gimmicky on the show anymore? I don't know. I kind of miss those things a little bit now. I did love the secret Windows.
We have lost that. But we have lost that. We did intend to have more gimmicks.
Yeah.
And where'd they go? We've lost our gimmicks. Enrico, do you have a gimmick this week?
No, I haven't. But
that's okay. It could still be on. I'm the one who should be providing gimmicks. Okay, I'll try to get back to that, Nigel. Maybe for next week's big anniversary show, I'll come up with a gimmick.
See if we can think of something. I'll put my thinking hat on as well.
Well, we did a couple movie reviews.
We did, yeah. I don't know if they ever really took off, but I don't know. I think the show could do with something like that. A lot of people like the Secret Windows phone apps. A lot of people like the Captain Dogger things that I did as well.
Those are good.
It's just trying to think of something every week. It's kind of hard, isn't it?
Yeah, it's odd, I think. But you did a really great job, especially with the captain.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was taking its toll on my vocal cords.
Well, you know, I wanted to do a book reading with you, right? I wanted to read some plays with you, Nigel. Whatever happened to that?
Yeah, you did talk about that.
We're going to do like the Shakespeare Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. We should have a think about that, actually. Maybe we can whip something up for next week.
Yeah. A little audio theater, a little In Tech We Trust theater.
Yeah, there you go. Sounds like a plan.
Okay, everybody, if you're listening next week, if we don't do theater, you can bash us for it.
You know what? If we do theater, I think they're going to bash us for it.
Either way, no, we're screwed. We're going to get bashed. Nigel, we just backed ourselves into a corner, didn't we?
Yeah. Okay, not to worry. So anyway, having Enrico on as a guest, thank you very much for coming on the show, Enrico. I do want to pick your brains about something, though. And this is not like just a plug for the Tech Unplugged show that you run. But there seems to be almost, a move towards having more of these smaller technology-focused shows. I know John Troy has got The Reckoning 2015 coming up.
Yeah, this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, this weekend. People can probably still go if they want, and they should try to.
It's so that's Half Moon Bay in the Bay Area, yeah?
Yeah, nice location.
So if you're around, I mean, it's not like I don't think it's a technology-focused show, as in it's not going to focus on technologies in particular, but people and their like technology careers, right? If you want to be less of an operator and more of an innovator and a creator and stuff like that, and it's got like a cracking lineup of people that are going to speak at that. So
yeah, it looks really good, and it's Sunday and Monday.
Right. Okay. And then, of course, Enrico, you've got your Tech Unplugged event. You did one in London earlier on this year. We've got Amsterdam coming up later this month. And I know you're at least thinking about somewhere in the States, maybe Chicago next year. So, you know, what's the big deal behind all of this kind of stuff? What motivated you actually to say, you know what, I want to organize and run an event of my own?
It's not difficult because I started doing this kind of event. It was 4 or 5 years ago, actually. And I started with, do you remember Fabio?
Fabio Rapacelli.
Yeah, my former partner in crime. And we started because with Juku, with our blog in Italian at the beginning, we wanted to find out if the audience was really there. So the problem with the blog is that you write a lot and you get some comments here and there, and sometimes you also get tweets and Facebook likes, but really there isn't a conversation. Sometimes it's just because people don't have time. I don't know. So we tried to organize this this first event. It was Juke Unplugged at the time, and it was me and Fabio talking for 8 hours. So
there you go.
Yeah, from 8 a.m. in the morning just to 4 p.m. So we started, the first edition was really, really difficult to manage because the format was really new at the time and was very difficult finding sponsors. So we spent some money to travel around Italy. They are organized like small seminars, okay? So 25, 30 people. But the success was has been incredible. And in the end, in November last year, I got 75 people in a single date.
Wow.
So, I started to think about Tech Unplugged, so an event with not just me, because it's really hard to build a day with 4 or 5 presentation and then put together some content also from sponsors. So I thought about you. So we are all in the same market with ideas that sometimes are not very very similar, but really it's at the base of the conversation. No, so I say something, you say something different, and at the end of the day, end users and also vendors. So I don't stop vendors from registering because I think that also vendor can bring a lot of value to this event.
Mm-hmm.
So you were there and you know how it went. So.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was great, right? And you get all the diversity of opinions and ideas from people that are kind of at the forefront of technology. But you know what I really got out of it was just the throwing a bunch of people in the room that are involved and passionate about technology and the kind of conversations that were going on, not even just the presentations, right? But I mean, like over lunch and over coffee breaks and stuff. For me, it was the networking, if you will. And you know what? We talked on this show, I think, probably maybe it was just last week when we were recapping VMworld, saying, you know what? Have some of the bigger shows lost their magic a little bit? And what do people get out of it? And it's like, you know what? Yeah, there's the parties and stuff. Obviously, they're great, right? But it's the networking. People go there to meet their peers and catch up and learn different ideas and stuff like that. And I don't know, Enrico, I was just kind of asking you, you know, your motivation behind it. Is it to drive networking among people? And
the first thing for me, just after all the experience in Italy, is that I get a lot of information from these people. So they are real enterprises, real organization doing a lot of IT.
Mm-hmm.
So just the fact that there is this conversation and they ask questions and most of the time they say, I did this and I want to compare my experience with yours. And
yeah.
So I get It's just you get a full picture of the market, because you get small companies, large companies all together, and it's really interesting, this aspect. Also, I think that another interesting thing is that vendors are forced to think differently in this kind of events. When a vendor comes with a presentation talking about ideas, technology in general, not the product,
yeah,
they get a real great feedback. And they can do a lot of networking in these coffee breaks, or also in the panels, they get a lot of questions. Oh, yeah, yeah. And so I think it also forces the vendors to think differently.
So speaking of vendors, if I can just hook you into this then, Mark. So, I mean, I'm looking at the Tech Unplugged website here, Enrico, and you've got like a bunch of storage vendors coming along, right? Just to throw a question at you, Mark, as you are a vendor, right? At a smaller event like this, what does a vendor look to get out of it or to put into it?
A couple things. Vendors are always looking for sales opportunities. So whether you call them leads or anything else, you just don't know. So the first thing is there is an opportunity that you may meet somebody there that needs a solution like yours, and then you can have a face-to-face discussion and accelerate the whole process. That's number one, always number one.
Mm-hmm.
The secondly, though, is the ability to just sort of get the name out and project, you know, who you are, and so people can get to know who you are. And then third, yeah, I think, and it's kind of shameful to say this, but I think third is hearing the discussion to say, so what's going on? Are there things that are there new things that we need to know? Are there, you know, are there opinions being expressed that are either positive for us or negative for us? That's feedback for the company. And you know, that's that's it. It's kind of like 1, 2, and 3. Sales, mm-hmm. Marketing, and then inbound.
Right. So, and on the marketing thing, I guess because, you know, with Stephen Foskett's Tech Field Days and stuff like that, they have a bunch of videos come out of it. And generally speaking, the guys that attend these events have, I guess, high-profile blogs and the likes and produce content out of it. Is that seen as like a positive, you know, for the vendor, that people who are not directly associated with your company or with the vendor will write blog posts and maybe talk on podcasts and stuff about their technology? Is that kind of a collateral marketing or whatever there as well?
That would be a secondary effect of the marketing. I mean, the idea is that you just want people to become more familiar with you. So if they do write something and you get mentioned in it, that's great. But there's, for the most part, there's not an expectation that, you know, if you come to this, you will write about it. I think some people feel that way. Uh-huh. And some entrepreneurs feel that way. Well, if we're doing a tech field day and if you're going to show up, of course you're going to write content about it. And then sometimes they harass people and say, how come you haven't written anything? And it's like, well, there was no guarantee.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, and other events might be different. When I was at HP, Calvin Zito and I, we put something together one year where actually it was a contest and people actually had to write, and the writing was the contest and there were rewards at the end. And so that was a case where we found bloggers, and we had independent judges. They weren't HP judges that were going to write, you know, judge them on writing style and content and all this kind of thing. And to me, that seems like, I'm kind of surprised that that doesn't go on more often. We had difficulty with the fairness and the judging and that sort of thing, but I think overall it worked out. But otherwise, with Steve's Tech Field Days and what Enrico is doing with Tech Unplugged, I don't think people are expecting content to be written, but I think they're hoping that it can be, or just, you know, to tighten up the relationships. I know for me, I'll just be very blunt. You know, Tegile is not part of the event. I joined Tegile, all this stuff was underway. We'll be there and we'll buy some beers the night before. But I'll meet people and I'll talk to them, and, you know, maybe we have a discussion about Tegile's technology, you know, hopefully we will, and people will want to know about it. And so, you know, we'll be visible and present there.
So networking, right? And talking to real people that have real businesses and real companies and stuff, yeah?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I'm a social marketer, so networking for me is marketing, and I probably should have made that more clear. you know, an event like this, it's that mix, it's that social marketing, mm-hmm. Where you get a little more skin in the game. But you get, you know, the thing about marketing is that it's always a one-way street, right? Traditional marketing is you're just trying to get the message out there, you're trying to leave an imprint. Well, the thing that's nice about these smaller events, well, it happens at the big events too. You get a lot of feedback, and that feedback's really valuable. Right. So any kind of event, that information's coming back in. At a smaller event where I think the conversations can be longer and they can be a little more intimate, you get a little more depth of knowledge that I think you can get from a big show. Although you can get some really great discussions at a big show like VMware too.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Hey, maybe one last question on this, Mark. So when it comes to marketing and stuff like that and all the content that's out there for a particular vendor, I know that me, right, as a consumer of products and as an end user or a customer, right, quite often when I'm looking for resources about a technology or about a company, I actually prefer the independent stuff or the stuff that at least I believe is independent, right? So rather than taking it from the horse's mouth on EMC.com or HP.com or whatever, I'd much rather take it from somebody who's, I don't know, maybe a customer and writes about it with their real world experience and stuff like that. Do you tend to track stuff like that as a vendor and as a social marketer at a vendor?
Social marketers definitely do. Traditional marketers do less of that, but they, you know, for instance, in marketing, you'll have customer case studies, mm-hmm. right? And so a vendor will publish a customer case study, and sometimes people in marketing feel that's fine. I know for social marketing, I'd rather find a blog post or a forum chat or something where somebody is saying something that includes, that might be 75% positive, 25% negative. I'd rather use something like that where I think there's a better chance that it will engage someone, because as good and as fair sometimes as case studies can be, they still have the corporate voice in them, and I think a lot of people would rather hear a different voice than the company's, than the vendor's voice.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of value, and so I mean that's why we sort of keep our fingers crossed, right? So we go to a small event like this, we think, well, maybe we can get a little more attention, maybe somebody will write something. You know, in the case of Tejal right now, right? Tejal is one of many companies selling flash storage. And a lot of people don't really know who we are. They see the name. It's like, I've seen this before. I've heard it somewhere, right? But if more people write about it and talk about it and they're more familiar with us and they feel that there is something to say, that talking about Tejal is not just like name dropping, if we can get to that point, then we'll get more mentions and awareness grows, right? It's a small drop that goes to a deluge at some point, right? But in order to get that to happen, people need to feel comfortable with you and confident that what they're saying isn't just a rack of bullshit.
Yeah. Okay, all right then. So let's pivot on to what tech news we've got this week. Strictly speaking, right, not enterprise tech or infrastructure tech here, but Apple has announced the iPad Pro, right? It's bigger, it's got a keyboard, and it's got a stylus. And you know what? I kind of care about the announcement, or at least I've at least read about it, okay? Because I am, like, itching to buy a Microsoft Surface Pro 4 as soon as it's released. So I'm, like, watching all the websites and stuff. When's it going to be released, what the specs are and what have you. So I don't know, maybe we'll talk about that in a second. Not much else other than that, though. I mean, there have been some storage vendors and storage commentators out there talking about the death of the SSD form factor as far as flash memory goes. We can maybe talk about that if we want. Now, one thing from last week's show that it didn't get a chance to talk about, though, which we may want to this week, IDC are insisting that the enterprise hardware market is still growing, right? In spite of the cloud. And I'd be quite keen on Mark and certainly Enrico, your opinions on kind of public cloud uptake in customers and companies and businesses that you know. So I don't know, let's hit the Apple announcement, right? Actually, let me give the floor to you guys on this one first, and then I'll talk about, you know, why I think the iPad Pro is going to be a piece of junk compared to the Surface Pro 4. But go on, do either of you guys have anything to say about the Apple announcements?
So from my point of view, it's kind of ridiculous because it's just a bigger iPad with a pencil. They call it a pencil, which is huge pencil. It's much bigger than the pencil that I have on my Surface, and with a key and a keyboard, which is something that is not really, they call it a smart keyboard, but actually something that was already available from third parties, and also Microsoft has a keyboard like that. I don't see any innovation, any particular interest in that kind of device. Also because iOS is not the right operating system.
Right. That's the crux of it for me, right? I couldn't agree with that more, right? For me, iOS is an operating system for consuming rather than creating, right? I know I'm diving into the conversation here, but, you know, the reason I'm looking at the Surface Pro 4 from Microsoft, right? So I'd be looking at the high-end model that supposedly, if you can believe the rumors, is going to have 16 gig of RAM in it, okay? Well, that's as much as I've got on my desktop that I do all my work on at the moment, so that'd be awesome. It's got Windows 10, right? And I am a very satisfied Windows 10 user so far. And because it's got Windows 10, I can run all of the software that I need. So Camtasia for my video recording and editing, Explaindio for doing my doodle sketches and things for my animations, or VideoScribe, whatever you want to do, right? This is full on Windows 10, so you can have anything on it. It's literally, for me, right, the Surface Pro 4, and because it's got the stylus, I'd be able to do my artwork and stuff on it that goes into my videos. Magic. It is properly an office on the road for me. And now, if the... I guess it wouldn't be an iPad, though, but if the iPad Pro ran Mac OS X or OS X, whatever it's supposed to be pronounced as, then maybe it'd be interesting. But iOS, just for me, is like the wrong operating system there. It's like, it's for phones and it's for... Well, I mean, Windows 10 is supposed to be for phones as well. So.
And if you look at the Windows 10 with the two modes now, when you detach the keyboard, it becomes a tablet. And when you attach the keyboard again, it's become a PC.
Uh-huh.
And that's the best feature that they have, because it really works. So sometimes I use the pen, because with OneNote, with many other applications, it's really well integrated. And so... And it has a false touch, so you can really get interesting sketches or whatever you need.
Yeah.
And on the other side, when you reattach the keyboard, the window changes, and you get all the buttons that you expect to use with the mouse. And it's just I can say magic, but
it's great.
It's really useful. I really like it. So Windows 10 is a great operating system, and Microsoft. I think Microsoft did a great job with the integration with Surface. I can see the same kind of integration with the iPad Pro, just because macOS is missing there.
What is Apple thinking, right? I mean, the iPad Pro will outsell the original Surface just because it's Apple, and Apple fanboys will buy it. But why is this Pro? Where's the Pro designation even come from, right? The fact that it's got a keyboard makes it Pro. You know, the fact it's got a stylus makes it Pro. I mean, that's bullshit. In fact, well, you know, maybe not, right? So are they talking about new apps for it? Did anybody hear that? I did not.
No, right? I didn't hear that. No, I did hear of new apps for the TV, but that's separate, right?
Yeah, so if there was, you know, and I don't know that it makes sense, right? If you have more interactive apps that would be available to use with the Pro, but it's the same OS, so it'd be the same apps that would run on phone and everything else. I don't know. It's just that Pro designation just kind of seems like, what, it costs more money, right? And, you know, it looks like a real lack of creativity there. You know, the watch was something different. Everybody expected that. So what are they going to do? Oh, and make a bigger iPad with a keyboard. Huh, really?
From a strategy perspective, right, so and we're not considering Microsoft potentially upsetting all of their hardware OEMs and stuff like that by bringing out their own hardware device. But when it comes to operating systems, right, and it remains to be seen how well they execute on this, okay, but having Windows for the Surface and for their phones and things like that, and desktops and servers and things, right, you've got a single operating system, good experience across the whole stack. Is that potentially better than what Apple are going to end up with by having OS X, OS X, whatever it's called, right, for laptops and what have you, and then a separate OS for their devices? Because why I'm asking that, right, is I'm thinking a kind of Microsoft Surface Pro or iPad Pro, but that was running OS 10, might be actually quite appealing to me, to be honest. Almost a tablet version with a detachable keyboard of the MacBook Air. I just wonder, I don't know, maybe they were worried about butchering sales of their MacBook line. I don't know. Seems like Microsoft have got a pretty decent, you know, I will say again, execution permitting, right? But it seems like they've got a pretty decent strategy there for me.
I think Satya Nadella has really put that in order. It was a mess. It was a mess when Ballmer was there, and Satya is aligning everything, and it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and if you look at overall strategy, not just Windows 10 as the operating system, but they are integrating everything. They are failing on the Windows Phone, probably. I don't know. We will see the next version. I'm really curious. But now we have all Microsoft application on all the phones. Office is available. Outlook is available. And it's not difficult to find people with the iPhone using Outlook.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So really, they are putting their application everywhere, and the mobile experience is all about applications.
Yeah,
so, yeah. So I'm trying to figure out how Microsoft is making any money off my Windows applications on my Android phone.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I use Outlook on my Android phone as well. You know, we used to make fun of Windows phones, obviously, with the secret Windows phone app gimmicks that we did. But I speak to a lot of people, right, that actually love the software side of the Windows phone, but say that the hardware is crappy. And you know what? That is the exact opposite experience. And I'm not saying that that's everybody, right? But I have spoken to quite a few people who've said that. They love it, but the hardware is just junk. I used to be an iPad mini user and an iPad user before that, and I loved the hardware. I mean, Apple had nailed it. The battery lasted forever. It was just a solid piece of kit, right? But I did not like iOS. And it's almost the exact opposite to what, at least in my experience, I'm hearing from people who are Windows Phone users. But actually, people that are Surface and Surface Pro users, they say the hardware's awesome and the software's awesome. So my opinion, right, I'm going to be buying the Surface Pro 4 when it comes out. But it looks like happy times ahead for Microsoft on that front. Though, actually, I don't know. Does anybody have any thoughts on Microsoft actually butchering the guys who used to be their partners, like the Compaqs and the HPs and the Dells and Lenovos and people who sell laptops and...
That damage is already done.
Is that done, yeah?
Done.
Okay. But not my Microsoft. So crappy hardware is a fault of vendors.
I get that.
Yeah, but it's not the way Microsoft did that. Again, Ballmer's decisions was brutal.
But yeah. We don't expect them to back out of the Surface Pro line, do we? Or do we think that's still a small possibility on the horizon?
You know, it's interesting. I think they're all in. You know, I've seen some speculation where, you know, they might sell the game, you know, the game manufacturing and the laptop manufacturing or the, you know, Surface manufacturing somewhere, but I don't think they can now. I think they have to keep it.
Also because I think that the Surface line is already piling up $1 billion per year, something like that.
Is that right?
Yeah, no. I think they are selling. Yeah, Microsoft is a huge company. Okay, so $1 billion probably is not in hardware for a software company is not a lot of money. But they are making some money out of it, so why not? And again, the next phone, the Surface phone or the Microsoft phone or whatever, probably will have a great hardware too.
Who knows? Hopefully.
Yeah, and it will be totally integrated with Windows Phone, so probably there will be some features like Continuum. I don't know how they call that. So application that will be able to run the same way on the Windows 10.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. So, it's interesting to think, isn't it? You know, Microsoft first started making phones, what, in the late 90s?
Yeah, the Windows phone.
Is it gonna take them, you know, 20 years before they finally get it right?
And you know what as well? Are they kind of taking a play out of Apple's book as well by having the Surface Pro where they build the hardware effectively themselves and the software, and it's a tightly integrated package? Should we not be giving them a hard time for saying, oh, They're not innovating there. I mean, I don't suppose we were suggesting they were innovating, really, but that's really a play out of Apple's book, right?
Look, Microsoft would be a lot better, and the PC industry would be a lot healthier had Microsoft not dropped the twin bomb of that horrendous Windows 8 at the same time they came out with the Surface. It just blew the industry up, right? What talk about an enormous self-inflicted wound.
Yeah, I do think they're doing a decent job with Windows 10. Have you actually changed to Windows 10 yet, Mark?
No, I'll be probably one of the last guys.
Really? Honestly? Well, it's
yeah,
really
I like
good.
7. I'm a big Windows
7. Oh, 7's great, yeah.
Well,
I'll say that. 7 was rock solid, but I love Windows 10, I'll say that.
Yeah, so you know, always, you know, I just want to wait and see. You know, I am concerned about the privacy stuff with Windows 10, right? Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to be able to turn it all off, but Microsoft wants to report everything, and you know, I'm just going to wait. I don't need to. My machines run great on Windows 7. It's fantastic OS.
I really should think about privacy and stuff like that a lot more. But you know what? Because I used to listen to podcasts about, I forget the name of the podcast, but it used to talk a lot about Android and privacy with regards to what Google's doing.
Oh, my God.
What I was going to do, to say to Mark, he is using an Android phone. So
yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too, yeah. But you know what? I just bury my head in the sand and pretend it's not important. But you know what? I'm sure it probably is. And I'm like, I just ignore it. Ignorance is bliss sometimes, right?
It's funny. We should have had you in the car with us last week. Enrico and Chris Evans and I drove up to Napa Valley to visit a winery last Thursday.
Oh, yeah?
After VMware finished. And I think we spent half the time talking about Google and privacy, didn't we, Enrico?
Yeah.
About half the time. And it was about a 6-hour day. So that means that the three of us spent 3 hours talking about Google privacy.
I think I'm glad I wasn't there.
Yeah. And Google Now, we talk a lot about the fact have always the information you need right on your hand. So they need to know everything about you because it's not possible. Even when you... So I was out in San Francisco looking for a hoodie for one of my kids, and I went.
That's not the one you left in my car, was it?
Yeah, not that one. But I was scared by the fact that you can get the right hour to go to the shop from Google Now. So it's incredible. So you see the rush hours, you see when people go buying stuff in that particular shop. And it is a feature that it's not available in here, but it means that they are tracking all the phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the best time to shop for this and that item? Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's awesome, right? I mean, there's so many great things that you can get from that, but it is like that two-edged sword, isn't it? It gives with one hand and it takes with the other. In order to get all of that and for it to know where you are and tell you, you know, what the best routes are and whether you're going to make it on time for your flight and where the best restaurants are, it needs to know stuff about you. It's like, I don't know.
And that's where Amazon says, oh, it's always a good time to shop from us.
Yeah, yes. There you go. Yeah. Anyway, so we were talking about hardware when we were talking about the iPad Pro and the Surface Pro and stuff like that. So just... on this thing that I mentioned earlier, right? So IDC had said that the enterprise hardware market was still going strong. Published a bunch of numbers recently comparing quarter two from this year, so quarter two 2015 to quarter two 2014. And some of the numbers were, right, so servers were up over 6%. Switches were up 1%. And router sales up 11.5%, right? All, apparently... in spite of the fact that the public cloud is supposedly taken over the world, which clearly it's not, okay. Enrico, you know, I'm not so up to date in exactly what you're doing these days in Italy and what have you, but are you still interacting with customers a lot? And if you are, what's the kind of public cloud uptake among businesses that you interact with over in Italy?
Well, so the kind of companies that I follow are... in the range of 1,000, 5,000, 6,000 employees. So they are medium, large-sized companies for Italy. And they are all looking at the cloud in some way. They are not building private clouds. But they are some of them are just buying Microsoft 365, and then they, after that first acquisition, they start to extend Active Directory in the cloud, and they are starting to say the next version of Exchange for us will be on the cloud, and so on and so forth. So they are going in this direction. I don't see a lot of infrastructure as a service. Some of them are trying, but there are different use cases. So I have a customer doing a new infrastructure on DigitalOcean, for example. So very easy to consume virtual machine with a very basic API, and they love it because they don't need to train developers to spend a lot of money to build the infrastructure. And they are all web infrastructure, all the backend is still in-house. I also see some interesting project with AWS, but for what I can see, there are always front-end projects. So e-commerce or just mobile workforce, applications, whatever. But nothing that I can say is strategic for this kind of companies.
Right. So, but even those who are dabbling with the likes of DigitalOcean and AWS and stuff like that, the back end, the core infrastructure stuff still remains in-house very much, yeah? And you're not seeing any of that creep out into the public cloud?
No, critical applications are still there. Many of my customers are manufacturing. So you want the MRP or the ERP just physically there, because you need to have all the connection all in place in the morning when people is in the office doing their job. So they are still afraid about connectivity. In Italy, we have a lot of problems about connectivity. Yeah, it's growing. It's growing very quickly. It's not that huge. So I see people continue to fatten the budgets for infrastructure. They're changing the way they think the infrastructure, but the cloud is just a small part of their budget today.
Okay. You got a take on this at all, Mark? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think infrastructure as a service is there mostly for new apps, you know, modern apps, big web apps, and that otherwise, you know, the infrastructure businesses continue to grow. They're not moving that. They're not moving those apps. They're not moving that infrastructure into the cloud. There's some of that going on, but the growth in the growth in infrastructure business is still large enough to exceed whatever siphoning off the cloud might be doing. Plenty large, right? What's interesting is I think new projects are increasingly being targeted at cloud.
Because I read something recently, maybe it was Pat Gelsinger had been talking about. Yeah, I think it was actually, because he was saying the boardroom at EMC overlooks, you know, the old deck buildings and all that kind of stuff, and it had made reference to say, you know, EMC is an organization, and I'm totally like winging this and paraphrasing, right, so don't take it as gospel or anything, but it overlooks all of the relics of like the mini computer age, or almost, right? And that constantly reminds EMC as an organization you need to change and, you know, evolve and all that kind of stuff. But he was saying, you know, that he anticipated that cloud computing was going to be like way more disruptive than moving to the PC, you know, moving away from the old mini computers to like the open systems age and what have you. And you know what, that was a massive old change, right, that left a lot of companies out of business. Yet I can't help but think that all of this talk about the cloud, as much as it's cool and as much as it's the latest and greatest newfangled thing, right, it doesn't seem to have yet had this kind of massive impact. We haven't, I mean, totally tell me if I'm wrong here, but we haven't had a huge casualty from the so-called transformation or this move to the cloud that's supposedly going on. You know, we haven't seen an HP go under or anything like that, have we?
No, but I think what you're going to see is that mobile apps will be more tied to cloud infrastructure than to corporate infrastructure. And as users move more productivity apps to phones, to perhaps the iPad Pro, although it seems unlikely considering what we just said, as that goes on, the apps will take people to the cloud and cloud infrastructure. Mobile apps will drive cloud infrastructure. They already are. That's what's been going on.
Yeah, it's already happening, actually. I'm following some project about cloud storage for my customers, and they are using S3 as a backend, and they have gateways in their private infrastructure, so sync and share, that kind of stuff. Happens all day. And they are moving parts of the infrastructure, but they are actually all new applications. Sync and share was not possible a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, in a private infrastructure. Now they can leverage the public cloud to put data. Also, sometimes they put everything. They also put the gateways for the sync and share and whatever. So it's quite interesting. So it's changing very, very quickly. And now there is this new thing happening about extending the private infrastructure to the cloud. So I work a lot with object storage. Many of them have now a S3 tiering functionality. So when you finish space capacity locally, you can grow on the cloud. Just you can put there the less user data or whatever. And now you have VMware with the ability to extend the NSX to the cloud. I don't know if it works. I don't know how it works, but they are working on that. So extending your infrastructure, managing the spikes, managing all the new applications seamlessly.
Thanks, Enrico. Dragging it back to what we just mentioned a second ago, though, about this kind of whole mobile apps thing, right? I don't know. So if the iPad Pro, if we're thinking that's not going to be a game changer in this area, I don't know. I'm struggling to get my head around that a little bit, actually, around this whole mobile apps thing. I get it, right? You know, don't get me wrong. I do get it. But are we ever going to be doing proper productivity on mobile devices? Or are they always just going to be predominantly consuming? And I don't just mean consuming media and things, but, you know, taking in emails and that kind of stuff. You're never really going to be massively productive on a mobile app, are you? Or into that bucket, are we throwing things like laptops and stuff?
Well, actually, I use, for example, from my job, I use Google Docs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I am on a train or at a conference or whatever, I use Google Docs there, and then I use it at home on my...
Yeah, but what do you use it on? What devices do you use it on?
Actually, on my Surface now, but sometimes just on the phone.
Really?
Because you have comments, you have to edit a few stuff, collect ideas, and then ideas becomes something more important and later. So it's I do that. So okay. I have one of these huge phones now, 5.5 inches. So it's...
Hey, what have you got?
OnePlus.
Is it a OnePlus One?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've got that. Yeah, awesome phone, by the way.
So I have a larger phone, the Surface. I can do that. I can change device many times in a day and edit the documents. And I'm talking about documents now, but I think that there are many different applications. Also, as I mentioned earlier, sync and share. Sync and share is you can now grab a file, edit the file, put the file back, and... So
I get that you can do it, right? I just like editing files and stuff on my phone. As awesome as my OnePlus One is, and yes, it is quite large, it's not big enough. I mean, Mark, are you on the road much? Do you do much content creation when you're on the road with a mobile device?
No, the only thing I do content creation-wise is shoot videos with it.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I do have... I've got the LG G4, which has an amazing camera. It's just mind-blowing. So I'm looking forward to doing videos, but... videos don't give you, you know, videos are infotainment. They don't give you, you know, content that you need to produce. And, and I can't do it. I can't do it on a phone. I hate typing on these things.
But even so, right, you might capture the video on the phone, right? But you're going to go and edit it on a laptop or a PC or something, though.
Yep. Yep. Right. Yeah. These things are, they're good for capture. They're good for reading information, but they're not good for production, I don't think. I haven't figured that out yet, so. I mean, I've tried doing PowerPoints with them, or Google Slides. I've got Word on it. I've tried doing Word, and I've tried doing text to, speech to text, and all that, and it's all garbage.
Seriously, I mean, PowerPoint on a laptop or a PC is bad enough. Never mind trying that old beast on a mobile device. Good grief.
Well, one good thing about it, right? There's certain practices that make sense. It's like no more than 3 or 4 bullets on a slide because you can't do that on a phone anyway.
Yeah, not that one, but you can use an iPad. So now the application are very good. I'm using the Surface 3, which is actually a PC.
Yeah.
But even if you use in the tablet mode with a pen, you can create amazing stuff. And then you have the stuff ready for the fine-tuning, fine editing in at home when you come back.
Mm-hmm.
So actually... especially because I'm always late with presentations when I go to the conferences or to my GCompliance and whatever. So I use that feature a lot.
What do you mean you're late with your presentations? I'm going to use that when you start hassling me. Hey, where's your presentation, Nigel, for Tech Unplugged?
No, this time it's ready. this time it's ready. It's already... I prepared it before August because... I have this idea of flash and trash that that I really like. So it's based on that. I wrote some stuff also for some vendors about that. And so.
Hey, so on that flash and trash, right, let's quickly pivot on to one last topic before we wrap up the show because we're probably around the 50-minute mark or something now.
You mean we've got our quota of bullshit attainment?
Pretty much we have, yeah, I think so. One last thing, right? So there's talk in the industry, at least by some vendors and by some industry commentators, is the SSD form factor, so like the 3.5-inch disk or the 2.5-inch disk form factor, the SAS interface, all that kind of jazz, right? Is that really the future for flash? It was based off of DSSD have come out with this proprietary form factor, similar in a way, I guess, to Violin. There's talk that Pure Storage are potentially skunkworking something similar. Is there actually, just in your opinions, I don't know whether you can even talk about this, Mark, certainly I'd be keen on your opinion, Enrico, is there a need for that? Or are SSD form factor flash, is that not good enough for 80-85% of workloads still these days?
It's plenty good for high density flash. For high speed flash, you probably want faster interconnects of one sort or another. But high density.
But what's the market for that, right? Because I thought all along, right, wasn't the, or at least part of the success of Pure Storage versus the less success, shall we call it, of Violin Memory, was that Pure aimed for, our general purpose traditional tier one workloads rather than the dragster Ferrari type workloads. Is there really a market for companies to be going out there and putting R&D into developing proprietary form factors for flash memory?
The Violin failed at the beginning, so they designed an amazing hardware, but they didn't care about features at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are catching up now. But really, they did a mistake that time. And I think that, on the contrary, if you look at companies like Pure Storage, they built the software first on standard hardware. Now, to go further, they need something more from the hardware. And probably the SAS backend, there are limits. And also the power consumption is not optimal. There are many things that they can improve by designing their stuff.
Okay, I see. So it's potentially a natural progression for somebody like that, right? So as the rest of the market starts catching up feature-wise and stuff like that, then to further differentiate, you need to start then looking at well, we've got better power and cooling, we've got potentially lower latencies, all that kind of stuff maybe, yeah?
Yeah, it could be, but really, software is still the key. Even if you are the best or the most powerful SSD array, the first thing that most end users are looking for, majority of end users, are software features today. Uh-huh. Well, yeah. This is what I see in the market. So they want everything.
Proprietary technology, proprietary hardware seldom wins out, right? It did, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Even recently, you could look at before all-flash arrays came out that, you know, some of the proprietary hardware stuff in a 3-par system gave it some advantages for total throughput. Not for drag race, but for overall throughput, the 3-par machines could really haul because of the wide striping that they did. But, you know, now with all flash, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, that proprietary stuff really doesn't do 3-par much good anymore. So when you look at what the interconnects are going to be for flash, and then you look at what, for instance, Intel is working on with Crosspoint and Optane, whatever we're calling it, right? If that stuff takes off and works, you know, you could have invested, you know, many, you know, mm-hmm. millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars in a proprietary system that just gets blown away by something that's available, yeah. you know, off the shelf. And yeah. so it's a very risky move, right? I think it makes more sense to develop software technology that can take advantage of common off the shelf hardware. It's getting very, very hard to afford to build your own hardware.
Mm-hmm. Leave that up to the likes of Intel and Micron, maybe, and people like that, yeah, who specialize yeah. in it. And just yeah. ride their waves.
Yep.
Yep. For me too.
Fair enough then. We've got a consensus there from the three of us. So let's wrap this show up.
Well, your question was about SSDs because there could be other interconnects for SSDs coming along. And my feeling is if they are standard, you know, interconnects and people have been looking at this stuff and there's, you know, there's probably competing standards and, you know, at Tegile we've looked at NVMe, for instance, and, you know, there are some others, but, you know, you'll see companies positioning themselves around candidates to be standardized.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right, then. So we've got our quota for the day. Should we wrap things up? Enrico, where can we find you on Twitter and the likes? And just quickly give us a 30-second recap of where and when for Tech Unplugged.
It's always difficult to say my Twitter handle because in English is Isignoretti. So... but it's
Signoretti, yeah. But how do you really pronounce it?
Signoretti. So
Signoretti.
That's
all right. Tell us, Tech Unplugged, 23rd, I guess, and 24th of September, Amsterdam. Yeah, 23rd is beers the night before, socializing, Woot! Networking, yeah. meeting real customers, and partying. Yeah,
exactly.
And much of the same the next day.
And next day, Tech Unplugged in Amsterdam. So
a little more serious the next day, Nigel.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's it's informal and it's an
Yeah, but it's not a party. I mean, you know, Wednesday night we'll be drinking beer, and then Thursday we're not going to be getting up in the morning and drinking beer, are we?
No. Yeah.
If you haven't got your presentation ready in time, some people might be. Okay, fair play. It sounds good.
Thank you very much, guys.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Great having you on, Enrico.